Welcome back to the Lumos Maxima podcast. I am host Sarah. That is host Delaney. She didn't say anything. Yep. I thought she was going to say something.
We didn't practice that.
No. Oh, God. We haven't actually, like, introduced ourselves in a hot second. So in case you've listened to 10 episodes and don't know who we are, I'm Sarah.
I'm Delaney.
And this is our podcast.
Better.
We are so good at this. As always, there's going to be spoilers and swearing and mature content and opinions. And if you haven't listened to any of our other episodes, you don't know that yet. But we like to hit on every single point, every single episode. So we are in our last installment of our beloved Golden Trio miniseries. I'm kind of sad about it. It's been fun. It's our first series. And I don't know, it's three really solid characters. Some of my favorite characters. Obviously, they're the trio. We love them. Mm-hmm. Last week, if you haven't heard episode 10, that is our Ron part one. If you haven't listened to that, then you'll miss his pre-Hogwarts family history and through book four. We're going to pick it up with book five this episode. And then we'll go all the way through his post-Hogwarts, whatever Cursed Child says he does, which I agree with, his Cursed Child stuff. And then at the end, we have a special little treat. We're going to wrap up all of our trios in body count, relationships, and horcruxes. Body count is not a sexual thing on this podcast. Body count is how badly they got fucked up in terms of, like, injuries. So there is, in, like, the Harry Potter community, the running Neville body count. His is the highest. Other than maybe Harry, although for all the people that try to kill him, he did not get injured a whole lot. He had more Quidditch injuries than he did actual, like, dueling injuries.
Yeah.
So Ron's body count is surprisingly high. He and Neville, I think, kind of are working on spots one and two there. But that's Seamus did it all to himself. I think Ron and Neville's were rarely ever self-inflicted.
Which almost makes Seamus worse, but you know, whatever.
So anyways, that's just our little intro for this week. Stay tuned for that little special wrap-up, and we'll let you know what next week episode is going to be at the very, very, very end.
Yes. So next we'll go into our weekly wizarding question segment thing. The question this week is actually Sarah's. And it is, when in animal form, can an animagi?
You can just say animagus.
Speak to animals. So, like, just like other transformed animagus, or can they just speak to animals in general?
Right, because, well, so there are three ways this could work. Either they can speak to anything that's an animal, which is a theory. Then there's they can speak to magical animals, because we know... We don't really get this from the movies, but in book three, Crookshank, which is Hermione's new cat at that point, and Sirius as a dog are, like, super good friends. And Crookshank is actually who takes the letter to the bank to get money out of Sirius's account so he can buy a broom for Harry. So they're obviously they can communicate in some way. But then there, so some fan theory is, like, only other transformed animaguses can talk to each other. So, like, the marauders would have been able to all communicate when in animal form, and they were all different animals, you know, stag, werewolf, not that he was an animagus, you know, all that. So they could communicate. And I've done quite a bit of research on this, and there is no definitive answer. But my thought on it is that they can speak to other transformed animaguses, and then they can also speak to magical animals. So they could communicate with, like, owls or toads or cats and stuff like that. But I don't think that they could talk to, like, your generic squirrel. Like, I don't think they could talk to those. So that's my inclination, just based on what I've read, I guess. I don't know. JK, tweet us. I keep requesting for her to tweet us. She hasn't yet, but I have hope.
Yeah, it's okay. She's just waiting.
She's waiting for the perfect opportunity.
Right.
I'll start tweeting her more often. We do have a Twitter. Not that anyone knows we have a Twitter. It's at Lumos Maxima Pod. You guys should tweet us.
Yeah.
Shameless plug here. Like, This week's corrections, I didn't come up with any, mostly because there weren't anything that were blatantly wrong about our first four Ronald points. The only thing that I will say is that we touched very lightly on book versus movie run, and they leave out of the movies a lot of Ron's humor. He's a pretty funny dude. I think we kind of talked about it last episode, but I've been noticing, because obviously all the movies are on right now because it's almost Halloween, and I've started reading the books again, so I've been noticing that they leave out a lot of his personality in general, not just his humor, which makes him seem, if you only watch the movies, he seems pretty generic, which plays into like his biggest fears and the stereotypes people have about him is that he's like a perfectly average individual in a trio of people who are like obviously pretty high achieving. And in the books, you can kind of get a better feel for why he and Harry become really good friends. Cause Ron is, I mean, obviously he's a good adventure buddy, but he's like a funny guy who has he doesn't have a lot of emotional sense or interpersonal sense or book sense, but he's pretty straight smart. Which is really beneficial because like, obviously Harry doesn't know anything and Hermione is really book smart, but she lacks some of the more obvious Occam's razor situation thinking that Ron kind of picks up on. So that would be my only correction for Warner Brothers that they did.
For Warner Brothers. In the movies, they also make him seem like kind of like the dumb best friend.
He's not. I think he's an underachiever as fuck.
But he's clever.
He's clever. And
he can go into a situation and go, you know what? This isn't a good idea. I know that this is not a good idea.
He seems to be like the only person who flat out is like, this is not a good idea. Like Hermione will try and make them ration their way through it. Ron will be like, this is not safe. And he's right. Like he's right most of the time. So
Exactly.
So anyways, that's all the corrections I have. We're going to get into it. Get ready. Book 5, Order of the Phoenix, Ronald Bilious Weasley. I can't get over his middle name. Guys, if you haven't listened to our last episode, I get a real good kick out of his middle name. So go listen to it because it's funny.
Just a goat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here we go. Book 5, Ronald Weasley. Okay, so with Order of the Phoenix, Ron doesn't exist.
No, this is literally like, so we did the whole Hermione, if Hermione was the main character thing, like this would be the year that Ron did nothing.
Right.
Like, it's weird because, so he's announced to be one of the two prefects along with Hermione. Right. So like, you would think this was going to be a pretty fun, involved year for him. And then when you actually read the book, like, you don't know where he is half the time.
Yeah. And, like, the poor guy, like, the one time he does well in Quidditch, like, Harry and Hermione aren't there. Like, they just completely, like, ignore the fact that he's, like, playing and everybody's, like, singing Weasley is our king. And they're like, what the fuck is happening? So, poor guy. He doesn't exist in this book. I don't know why.
I don't. Yeah. I don't know.
It's very strange that he's, like, left out.
Not only is he left out, like, It doesn't even give you an inclination of what he's actually doing when he's not with Harry and Hermione.
Right.
He
really just doesn't exist in this book.
Yeah. And it's kind of a lapse in like what's going on. But that was a weird one.
But especially because, he's chosen as a prefect. You would think that.
Right. He's got to be doing something. Yeah. Hermione. In book 5 when you're reading it. So they don't even put the prefix stuff in the movies. So shame on them. Because it's a big moment. One, it's super awkward between Ron and everyone else over this whole prefect thing. Because his family, openly says, oh, we thought it was going to be Harry. Which is really awkward. But then Hermione is described as doing so much stuff. So the Fred and George, the twins, have started perfecting their wizarding Weasley whatever's and they're looking for people to test on So they're offering money to younger kids who are in Gryffindor. And so Hermione spends like a lot of her year shutting down illegal testing facilities. And like Ron decides he doesn't want to be a part of it because he doesn't want to squander the twins' business opportunities, which is nice of him as a family member, but probably poor of him as a prefect. But like that's the only time it even mentions that he's doing anything that's related to the position.
Right.
Which so is
not like in these gaps, he's like off being a prefect and like,
no,
like,
he's
and people follow rules or
no, he's like, just off, I guess, by himself eating. Yeah,
I don't know.
He eats a lot.
Yeah,
it's now this is a tough year. The body count for Ron is high in this year, but this is a tough year for the Weasleys because this is also the year that Arthur Weasley is attacked.
Right.
And it's sad to see. I guess not a tragedy. I mean, he doesn't die, so I don't think it's necessarily a tragedy, but it's really sad to see something so awful and life-threatening happening to the Weasleys, because up until this point, other than Ginny's, well, for us, it was year two. For her, it was her first year mishap mm-hmm. with the whole diary thing, which was obviously horrifying. Since then, it's been like pretty quiet in terms of the Weasley family. They've been pretty safe. They haven't necessarily been a target. It's hard because Harry isn't, for all intents and purposes, he's an honorary member of the Weasley family. So not only does he know that the attack has happened and he's who notifies the authorities, but he like is the snake in the attack. So it puts a lot of weird air between Ron and Harry when this happens.
Right.
And like Ron's generally pretty understanding of what's going on with Harry. He's like, oh, you hear voices. Okay. Oh, you talk to snakes. Like, that's cool. We'll roll with it. Like, oh, your godfather is a mass murderer. Okay. Like, you know, he always believes him. He's always stood by Harry in terms of, you know, he says Voldemort's back. Ron's like, he's back then. Like, no questions asked. And this is kind of, other than the book four, like, I can't believe you put your name in without me thing. This is one of the weird moments between them where Ron kind of questions, I guess, whether or not Harry is who he says he is in terms of beliefs, because he could easily be, well, we haven't got to Occlumency and stuff yet, but he could easily be like working in conjunction, maybe not intentionally, but working in conjunction with the dark side of things.
Right.
Because like, this is really horrific. Like Mr. Weasley almost dies. He's attacked by Nagini, who you can't just heal up the wounds that she gives you. She's dark magic. Yeah. And at this point, we don't know that she's dark magic yet. But, like, you can't, he almost dies. It's really sad. Papa Weasley, God love him.
Yeah. JK almost fully killed him off. That would have destroyed everybody.
That would have been hard. She also almost killed off Ron, and then instead decided to kill off one of the twins, which, I don't know, for me, kill Ron. But that's just me.
I think it would have been way too devastating for Harry. How Arthur was way too devastating for Harry.
Yeah, so it's a tough year for him. He's also attacked by people and brains. So
the brains part is a very weird one, but
the brains part is a weird one. It's weird because there's a lot in Order of the Phoenix that never gets explained in terms of content, which is difficult for me because she introduces a lot of elements of magic that never get touched on again. One of them being the brain tank.
But at the same time, it's fitting because it's in the Department of Mysteries. 99% of the population, they don't know it either.
Right. The weird part about this particular instance for me is that there's nothing that suggests that a majority of the wizarding population has anything to do with science or with like testing and research. So just to have it, and they're not like human-sized brains. They're like big old fat boys. And he gets attacked and he ends up having scars on his arms from them, which it's the so much that happened in the Department of Mysteries and in the particular ministry escapade that they go on in this book is not in the movies. And Ron
everybody's fucked up by it at the end.
We got like concussions, Ginny has a broken ankle, like it's not good. But everyone's like, no, Harry, we're going to go with you. And he's like, no, I go alone. And it's actually not Luna's call to ride Thestrals. It's Ron's. So good for him for paying attention in the class that he thinks is pointless.
Yeah. But yeah, and like you said, he like defends Harry in this book,
mm-hmm.
probably a little extra because of what he did in the fourth. But yeah, like during the forming of the DA and everything, he defends Harry and says like, no, he can be a good teacher. He'll do this. And then
yeah, Zacharias Smith being a big old dick about it, and Ron's like, yeah. Look, man, I was there for some of it, and you're like, yes, you were, Ron. We forget about that.
Yep. And I also think we forget that I think we do see a development of Ron through like Harry's teaching of these things too, because even though Ron was there for those things, this is the first year where he was really getting into like the thick of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because in like the first and second years, he was like there for like 75% of it. But then like the real end nitty gritty stuff, Harry did on his own. This year he does.
Yeah, he's definitely in it. And he's not just physically having a stake in what's going on. Obviously, he has, anytime he goes on an adventure with Harry, and by adventure, I mean death trip, he is physically invested because he ends up getting injured most of the time in some way. But this year, he starts to become emotionally and relationally invested because Percy, who does not get mentioned very much in the movies, but is a much bigger player in the books. He's the closest older brother. Is he the closest older brother? No, he's older than the twins. So he's the second closest older brother to Ron, who works basically as the assistant to the assistant of the regional director of magic. But he kind of works under Barty Crouch in some capacity as a page, basically. But he works for the ministry and has a very poor relationship with Arthur and the rest of the family, and really has to overcome, he thinks he has to overcome the stigma of the Weasley name. And Ron is most likely to turn out like Percy versus like Bill or Charlie or the twins, who turn out to be like great people who think there's nothing wrong with their views on wizarding society. And Percy, like, he personally reaches out to Ron and he's like, hey, you don't want to be in with Dumbledore. You don't want to be in with Harry Potter. Like, you don't want to run around with a bad crowd. And, like, basically it's like, you need to stop being friends with these people. And Ron's like, yeah, I'm probably not going to do that because I think that they're right and I believe in what they're doing. So he makes a choice. And, like, not that Percy and Ron are ever depicted as being close, but he makes a pretty deep choice to, like, lose that relationship with a brother for Harry, which, you know, I mean, it's not like his favorite brother by any means. It's probably his least favorite sibling of all of them, including the ghoul in the attic. So it's not like a huge loss, but you know.
Yeah.
So at the end of book five, Umbridge is doing whatever it is that Umbridge does. What is Ron doing? Because like Hermione and Harry go into the woods with Umbridge on their own. Where is Ron?
He is back with Ginny and Neville and Luna. They were like, you know, like attacked or whatever. And then they ended up attacking. It was Ron's idea to do something.
Okay. Well, anyways, Ron's not in the forest. So whatever, Ron.
But Ron got them out of like the grasps of Crabbe and Goyle and Malfoy. And did something.
Ron did something. Because then
so bad.
They all end up going to the ministry together. So anyways,
cannot remember, but Ron, like, even Hermione was like, that was clever. Like, good job.
Yeah. And he gives them some of the Wizarding Weasley boxes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. He offers them a treat. Okay. That's what he was doing. So, obviously, like, things are going pretty poorly for the Wizarding world as a whole. At the end of book five, we start at book six, and at this point, like, Ron pretty much commits to the Horcrux hunt, which is the biggest, I think, revelation to come out of Half-Blood Prince, is that he commits to going on this hunt and understands, or we think he understands, the magnitude of the decision that he's made. But on a much lighter note, this is basically just the year that Ron is obsessed with Ginny's love life for whatever reason. Like, Ginny is a very independent girl. She don't give two shits. But he's, like, constantly commenting on her boyfriends and, like, how she's got a different one. every couple weeks or whatever. And Hermione's like, who even cares? And he's like, that's my sister. And you're like, you haven't cared that she was your sister for 5 years. Like, chill, bro.
He basically calls her a slut.
He does. Which, bully on you, Ron, because you have an exhibitionist relationship with Lavender Brown for like 65% of this year. Yeah. So, fucking God, Lavender. And if you are a raging feminist, which is cool, you do you, boo, then you probably hate all the comments I have about Lavender Brown. I think her character is awful. I love to hate her character. She was the girl that I hated in middle school. I've heard other podcasts defend her and talk about how it's so shitty that she's written that way, and JK can't be a true feminist if she's gonna write female characters this way. And I'm like, I know people that are like that.
I was gonna say, some females just act like that.
Some females literally are just like that. She's a little cray cray. But the whole reason that Lavender even comes into play is because Ron has come off of his Crumb jealousy and is now on his Zachariah Smith jealousy, which is hilarious because, like, this is the emotional turmoil that we were talking about book six or people in general. It's the nobody really learns anything all that significant this year, and nobody really does any, like, cool-ass magic or anything, and not that much happens with Voldemort until, like, the very, very end, but it is the year of relationships.
Yeah. It's basically like relationships and like apparating. That's it. That's the only thing that happened in this book.
Yeah. So
they start learning to apparate. That's it.
And Hermione was only using Zachariah Smith because Ron had already started dating Lavender and she was jealous. So she didn't even date him. She just kind of brought him around and like invited him to Slug Club events and stuff and like just to make him jealous. And then it makes Ron... Ron is the pendulum that swings too far to the right, and he's in this just tragic relationship.
And yet still concerned. He's like, well, Hermione kissed Crumb. You have chapped lips because you're making out with Lavender so much.
And it's funny because like the another Ron body count, he gets poisoned because he eats. He gets poisoned because he's gluttonous, which I think is a very funny side note for things. Ron is always portrayed as eating. And he eats chocolates that were not sent to him. They were sent to Harry from Romilda Vane, who, if you remember the movie, she's the one who's checking him out in the library. And Hermione's like, she only likes you because you're the chosen one. And Harry's like, but I am the chosen one. She smacks him with a book. That's Romilda Vane. That's cameo she gets. I know. That's such a great scene. The sixth movie is so good, guys. It is, yeah. I just watched it the other day. It's really good. And he just starts to die. And so Harry takes him to Slughorn, who obviously kind of can fix him. And then he is fixed and then he gets poisoned like the next second. So he gets back-to-back poisonings. But it all starts because he eats stuff that isn't his, which is kind of funny. Cool. So at this point, the Ron body count is at 2 for book 6 because he gets poisoned twice. But this is where Hermione and Ron's relationship takes a turn because Hermione's like freaking out that he's in the hospital because he goes, Madame Pomfrey obviously has to like fix him because she fixes everyone. Yep. She's always my unsung hero. And Hermione is like, she's like, I'm here. Like, is he okay? And Lavender's like, why are you here? And she's like, I'm his friend. And then Ron's like saying her name in his sleep and like whispering his day. And like, they kind of reconcile. And so they kind of, he breaks up with Lavender, like just basically by ignoring her. Yeah. And then
ghosting.
He literally just like, he fakes being asleep whenever she comes by, and then he stays in the hospital extra long and doesn't tell Lavender when he's doing that. He starts spending more and more time with Hermione, and then Lavender ends up like officially ending it, but it's all just, it's all cray cray. These people are not emotionally equipped to have relationships.
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. He plays Quidditch this year, so that's cool.
Yeah.
But he's not that good.
No, he's not.
He's not. He gets better. I call it Beta. He does. But he's not that good. Oh, no. Guys, total side note, because I just used my little Monty Python accent. I'm going to make Delaney do an episode where we just use British accents.
Oh, hell no.
Hell, yeah, my
oh,
dude.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah,
no,
it's
no.
going down. She's.
I will, listen, I'm trying to go to Scotland and the UK, and if they hear this, I'm going to get kicked out.
Yes, because no. If you guys have been able to figure out who we are at this point, I'll give you $5,000. There you go.
True.
True, yeah. But... I don't know. So there's drama with Harry because of what's going on with Slughorn and Harry's newfound potion talent. And there's drama with Hermione over relationships. And then there's also drama within the trio because Ron's not a part of the Slug Club, which we touched on in Hermione's episodes, because obviously she and Harry are both part of the Slug Club. Everyone has a lot of emotional growth in book six, which I like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tension between the trio members on all accounts. Hermione and Ron and and you know, it just, yeah.
Academically, yeah. Romantically, just life, growy, uppy in general, there's a lot going on there. And on top of that, he also almost dies in the Battle of the Astronomy Tower.
Right.
Which is not at all in the movie. It should be. Yeah. It's a big moment. This is actually where Bill gets all of his werewolf scars from. It's this moment. And this is another instance of liquid luck being used. So they learn about it at the beginning of the book. And then towards the end of the book, everyone takes it. And that's how they survive this battle. So this is post-Dumbledore's death, pre-end of the book, right? In that little weird, like, 14 pages. Whatever. It's not 14. It's longer than that. But,
So
he survives. He's actually very instrumental in getting everyone out and safe. Because at this point, Hogwarts has been taken over by Voldemort and his underlings. Snape has taken over, so this is where they decide they're not going back, and that's pretty much where book six ends.
Right. Yep. That's everything's in turmoil.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much,
including their emotional health.
They're always in turmoil. These people.
I know.
Oh my god.
Including their emotional health.
Yeah. Really. Oh god. And then. Book seven.
Yeah, and book seven. Yeah, we're at the pretty much end. So in book seven, there's a lot that happens to Ron and a lot that happens to the Weasleys in general.
Starting with a wedding. Hell
that's
yeah.
A good part.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's not, well, so the book opens with Harry. Well, no, the book opens with Snape doing an unbreakable vow, which is not for this episode at all. But Harry is about to turn 17. That means that his trace is going to expire. So that's what's on all underage wizards. So they can't use magic outside of school. And then also his protection charm is about to expire. So all of the Weasleys are involved in the, I don't know, how many Harrys are there? Are there seven? Is it the seven Harrys?
I think it's seven. Yeah.
I think it's seven because that's that lucky number, but then also plus Harry. It also mimics the Horcruxes. But all of the Weasleys, minus Charlie, Charlie's not there, are a part of this. So the twins and Ron and Hermione and Fletcher, for whatever reason, and Bill, they all take, not Bill, Fleur. But at this point, they're getting married. They all take Polyjuice Potion to become Harry, to take his place. They all leave Privet Drive at once. So many, Moody dies. Rest in peace to my favorite weirdo. He dies in this. But they all constant vigilance. Obviously he didn't see it coming. I've used that joke before. It's still funny to me though.
You have.
But, like the whole Weasley family puts themselves at huge risk pretending to be Harry Potter so that he can move safely to the Burrow. And like, ugh, we got losing an ear. We got death. And then we got a wedding.
Right. Because God, there needs to be something happy in this book.
Which is awesome. My only quibble with that whole thing is that Harry's birthday is the day before the wedding, and Harry's like, I don't want it to be a big deal. And so like they do presents at breakfast. And I'm like, this is the equivalent of like the 30th birthday. That's when I think I come of age or like the 21st birthday. Like it's kind of a big deal. You know, you're an adult.
I do get it. I don't like big deals for my birthday either. I don't.
I want everyone to pay attention to me and give me cake. Ooh. But he gets Harry gets like really touching presents from the Weasleys and from everyone. But Bill gets married, and this puts a lot of strain on the trio. Not that Bill's getting married, because obviously they like who Bill's getting married to. They've met the whole family before. Well, okay. The women don't like who Bill's getting married to, but everyone else does.
Right.
Yeah. Which, you know, Fleur, I don't know. If you got it, great. Rock it, I guess. Yeah. But the trio is, like, actively trying to plan how they're going to hunt down all these Horcruxes based on the very little information that they've been left. And Ron's mom is not letting them do it.
Yeah.
Which is great, but... we learn so much about Horcruxes in like 4 pages, where it's basically Ron's like, what's like, how do Horcruxes work? And Hermione's like, well, based on this book that I apparated out of Dumbledore's window after he died, which obviously he wanted me to have it because he let it apparate out the window. They're basically, and she just like word vomits all over them about what a Horcrux is and how they work and what can be a Horcrux and blah, blah, blah. And they kind of
stay going, oh shit.
Not explained this very essential plot device. And we kind of get the idea that like none of the Horcruxes that Voldemort has made are going to be like very generic objects. They're going to be something important, and they try to put together how many they've already killed and how they're going to kill them. And these first couple chapters are like jam packed. But
And Harry thinks that he's going to do this alone for like a half a second, which is
yeah, that's going to be a no. We do find out in this book that Ron is the most affected by Horcruxes, which a listener brought this up to us. Horcruxes feed off of the energy that's inside of an individual. And I don't know, because it's in the book, they're like trying to decide if it's like a possession and stuff. And like it's the Horcrux is separate from how Ginny was actually possessed by a manifestation. The Horcrux is like, so they're wearing the locket when they find the actual one. And Ron is the most affected. And the listener brought up that he might be most affected because he has some of the most innate, raw, magical potential. Which is kind of an interesting way to look at him, because I wouldn't say that he has the most magical capabilities, but he could easily have the most magical potential, I think.
Yeah.
Based on his lineage.
And I think, and I think that we see more instances of him doing kind of unintentional magic with his emotions.
Yeah, nonverbal. Other
trio.
And so we did have a super awesome listener send us quite a bit of information on that. So he does have instances, especially in books 6 and 7, of nonverbal magic that's emotionally linked, which people train their whole lives to be able to do full-fledged nonverbal magic. And I don't know that we see any instances of him doing like nonverbal magic like flying or all the stuff that Dumbledore does, but we do see him show that potential to do it, which I think kind of clues in like Ron could be a very powerful wizard if he chose to be.
And like it also seems to be that his magic is more connected to his emotions than some other people, so that could also be why the Horcrux affects him more.
I definitely think that's it. But he has a really hard time with it. And it's actually what turns him to leave the Horcrux journey, which was a really hard moment when I was reading it, because up until this point, Ron has been pretty much a steadfast, loyal friend who has been down for whatever he thinks that Harry thinks needs to happen. And it's difficult to see a character that was written to portray this unwavering friendship element that people search their whole lives to find in another person, only to see him give up on it, which obviously it doesn't last. He comes back. He uses everyone's favorite putter outer to find his way back. So we find out, I think in this book, it's called the Deluminator now. It's got some names, but we find out why it was that Dumbledore left this to him. And good on Dumbledore for knowing. So it makes you, that to me, once we get to the point where Ron does come back, it shows me that Dumbledore had a plan. Whether or not we knew he had a plan was totally different. Yeah. But like he knew Ron was going to have doubts and was going to have the hardest time with it. And so I like that that element was thrown in, because you get the feeling a lot of the time at the beginning of end of 6, beginning of 7, that Dumbledore like didn't know what he was doing, didn't actually have a plan, didn't actually have direction for these kids. But now we know he had something going on.
Yeah, and I think Ron not only had the hardest time with the Horcruxes, but I think he had the hardest time with this whole journey, because Hermione has her parents, but she does, you know, they're obliviating and they, they're gone and they're safe. Harry doesn't really have anybody except for the trio and the Weasleys. Ron has his entire family who he's worried about and can't do anything about, and it's completely out of touch with.
Yeah.
And his whole life has been about other people. And I think this is the one time where he's like, if this is like the end, do I want to be doing this? Like,
yeah, do I want to spend it here? He definitely has the most family ties. And there is a beautifully touching moment at the beginning of Deathly Hallows where Harry's talking about like how they don't really understand. And Hermione's like, I've been packing for weeks now, making sure that we have everything. I mean, she's sitting there sorting through textbooks, trying to pick out which ones might actually be helpful. And she's like, what, like I went and what you guys don't know is like my parents don't think that they have a daughter anymore. They've got new identities. They think that they're going to move to Australia. And like, I've like, I'm not a part of a family anymore. And Ron's like, yeah, let me take you up to the attic and show you what I've done. And so they have a ghoul in the attic, which doesn't make the movies either, which is super disappointing because it's just a great comical point. But they bewitched it to look like Ron if he had some highly contagious disease. And he's like, now my family's protected. Like, when I don't come back to Hogwarts, they're going to come looking for me. And to make sure my family's safe, we're going to show them this bewitched ghoul who's going to live in my room. And they're not going to question it. But at least my family's not going to be under interrogations for, like, where I've gone and what I'm doing. So Hermione and Ron put so much thought into something that it seems like Harry has put very little thought into.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, too, is that the difference, too, between Ron and Harry at this point is that Harry has known since he's realized he's a wizard that, like, this is kind of, like, his destiny. Like, he didn't know 100%, but, like, he knew that his entire life is going to be tied to Voldemort one way or the other. Ron kind of stumbled in on this.
Yeah. I mean, every year, Harry knows he's going to be attacked, and every year he's had attempted assassinations on his life. Ron has not. He's been a part of it, but like it wasn't until much later on that people were actually trying to kill Ron. So it definitely gets into it in a different way. But we see some really good Ron moments in this book. One of which is everyone gets captured and taken to Malfoy Manor, where the whole gang, apparently just all the dark wizards, hang out at Malfoy Manor. I'm like, you guys could go get them. You know where the house is.
Yeah,
but whatever. And Bellatrix is like, yeah, I'm about to fuck this bitch Hermione up. And Ron's has a very passionate plea to kill him instead, torture him instead. Like, this is where you kind of get the idea, like, oh, the books, like the book six reconciliations that they had were good. And so that's a really good moment for him. Also, when he comes back, he comes back and has some information for them, and also saves Harry from drowning. So that's pretty cool, I guess.
No, that's good. Yeah, you know. And I also think that moment in Malfoy Manor is a big emotional moment for Ron, not just because we see him stand up and try to take Hermione's place, but like he has to listen to her being tortured. Like,
yeah, it's in the movie, it's a brief and fleeting scene that's still very sad, but in the books, it's drawn out like over a majority of the chapter. It's really not good. So you get the idea that they're going to be together, which if you just read book seven, they belong together.
Yeah.
If you read all the other ones, they don't.
Well, okay. I don't agree with that, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Book seven is where it's very obvious that it's happening.
Yeah. Ron body count. He gets, is it splinched or splinched? Splinched.
Splinched. Yeah.
Splinched. They're He's operating
very painful.
Very painful. It basically rips your cells apart, so it's difficult to heal. It happens when you operate improperly. So they're trying to get away from Death Eaters, and they're going to Grimmauld Place, and a Death Eater has grabbed on and has seen the doorway, so it's no longer a safe place. So they have to go somewhere else. And since they kind of bounce between two locations in a split second, he basically gets his arm ripped off of his body and has to be healed. And they also, on top of all that, cannot go back to Grimmauld Place.
Right.
So they have to go. Which is really It's really devastating for Harry. Yeah. They blow up the Lovegood household accidentally.
Yeah.
And lots of wands get broken. Book seven's wild, man. It's jam-packed. I forget that book seven is almost the biggest of the books.
Yeah.
It's a thick one.
So dense. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I split it up into two movies because shit.
Yeah. There's a lot going on. But this book's really nice for me because it shows that even though Ron is wavering in some things, he still has a lot of conviction once he does believe in something. I find that with a lot of characters, there are people who adamantly disagree with what Harry says is reality, and there are a lot of people who blindly follow him. And right. although Ron is generally on his side, this book shows, and I mean, most books, he has kind of the questioning of what's going on, whether right. or not that's a good idea and stuff. And so for him to leave the trio and regroup, when I read it originally, I was pissed that he even decided to turn his back on him. Mm-hmm. But reading it now, it seems like more of a good decision because
yeah,
he's got a lot more at stake in terms of what he could lose than everyone else that's involved, at least trio-wise. Right. And he, like, his life would be totally different. He could leave with his family and go live with Bill and probably be fine.
Right.
I mean, yeah. go live in Egypt. No one's going to find him. Like,
right.
yeah. they'll be fine. So it's,
but
yeah, I think it's good that he takes a moment to kind of evaluate if he wants to be there, because Hermione is going to be there no matter what, because she, although she has parents that she loves, she can separate them and get the 6 degrees of separation to keep them safe really easily. Right. Emotionally, it was a difficult decision, but physically, it was very easy to do.
Right.
And Ron can't do that.
And the other thing, too, is that Hermione had the time to, like, think about it and prepare for that. Ron really didn't. It was just kind of like, it just happened, and then he's there, and he never got the chance to really, like, sit there and be like, is this what I think I should be doing? Is this what is best for me and my family? And, like, when he leaves and then he's away from them, it's kind of like a pivotal moment of him going, no, this doesn't feel right. I need to be with them.
Yeah. And he has that beautiful moment where he's like, I had a little light and it just went inside my heart and I heard Hermione's voice and I followed it. Mm-hmm. And although I think that was lame, good Dumbledore puppet yeah. mastering going on there. Yeah. Obviously
wanted them to be together. Okay.
Okay, whatever. not even close. So obviously he lives through the Battle of Hogwarts. He's instrumental in helping get rid of some of the final Horcruxes. Mm-hmm. Super instrumental in making sure Harry doesn't die, and he lives happily ever after. We've kind of touched on what happens to him after Hogwarts because his is very intertwined with Hermione's. But he yeah. does go and work. He does not go back to school. He and Harry don't go back to school. He becomes an Auror, which a lot of people have said that he was more qualified to be an Auror than Harry was. I think that that's a bad statement. I think Harry would have been better as a teacher of, like, Defense Against the Dark Arts than as an Auror, because it was not, he didn't really want to catch bad guys. Like, that wasn't his niche, right. so to speak. Yeah. But no, magically, Ron is not more qualified than a lot of people to be an Auror. He does have the magical sense in terms of understanding the dynamic, but
yeah.
I don't think he was cut out to be that.
He's probably a decent Auror, but nothing.
No, he's probably, he was probably just fine at it. A lot of people say that, like, Ron should have been head Auror. I don't think so. I don't think Ron has the leadership capability or the organizational skills. But he does not stay in Auror, which I think is good. I think there are places much better suited for him, and I actually really like his career choice, his end game yeah. career choice, which is working at Weasley's Wizarding Weezes, because they're a man down.
Yep. Yeah, it's sad, but I think it's probably good for him and the family.
Yeah,
and to have two Weasleys working there, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a really good family moment. I also think it shows that his priorities are in fact his family. He's from a family that's very family oriented, and he himself is family oriented. Right. So I like that he ended up working in the new family business. I think that was really good, a good choice. Yeah. He also becomes a dad. It's hard for me to imagine what Ron would be like as a parent, just because I don't see him taking care of himself in a particularly, like, good way. Mm-hmm.
I actually think he'd probably be a lot like Arthur. I really do.
Arthur, yeah, I don't know. Arthur's always just seemed like a much calmer human. That makes him like a really chill parent. I don't know that Ron would be like an absent parent, but I think there's a lot of stuff that he would be like, yeah, do whatever you want. And Hermione would be like, God, please do not do whatever you want.
Like, yeah, no. and that's the point of Arthur that I'm saying. Is that, like, there's a lot of times in the books where Arthur's just like doing the exact opposite of what Molly wants him to do. Arthur's just like, oh, cool, you took the car? Sick. How did it go?
Yeah.
So I think that would be very similar with Ron.
Yeah. I don't think he'd make a bad parent. I think he and Hermione would make good parents. I think their parenting styles are so different, it was probably, like, painful. But...
yeah, but at the same time, like, it may have been painful for them, but maybe not for the kid.
Maybe. Know?
Like, because you get a... Because with two different parenting styles, you get a lot from each one, you know? So, that's what I would think. They get distracted from Hermione, but, like, they get the fun part from Ron.
Yeah, he gets to be the fun parent. That sucks, guys. Being the fun parent is so much more fun than being the not fun parent.
Right. And that probably comes to tension in the relationship. But
yeah, it's talked heavily in Cursed Child. So if you're interested, read that book, which I hate Cursed Child.
Ugh. Yeah. Now we're going to do our little extra segment. We're going to go over the body counts.
Body counts. Yay, body counts. I'm sitting on a leather seat and my fat thighs are sticking to it. So if you heard that sound of flesh peeling off, that was me. I just shifted around.
I don't think we heard it, but thank you for putting that in.
I can put the microphone lower if you guys need to hear it.
No, thank you.
Body count.
Body.
Ron's is the highest.
Ron? I don't think until, like, you wrote this out in this document that I realized how bad Ron has it.
Ron has it real bad. Now, to be fair, Harry almost dies in every single book. And most of his injuries are Quidditch related.
They are. I think we expect it from Harry. We don't really expect it from Ron.
Yeah. So Harry, like, he almost dies. There are a lot of attempts on his life. They're all unsuccessful until the very last one. He is the only person who actually dies of the trio.
Yeah.
But he got better. Oh, so
we cannot do an episode in that accent.
It's just the Monty Python guy.
My ears will bleed if we try to do that.
My ears will bleed if we try to do that. So Harry obviously is like, it's super obvious to be like, yeah, Harry's got it really rough. He does. Ron, though, book one. Giant marble sword to the temple.
Yeah. God. Poor kid.
Almost dies. In the hospital for a really long time.
Yeah. And then book two, he does to himself, but he starts up slugs.
Oh. Yeah. Also gets trapped in the Chamber of Secrets with a now insane Professor Lockhart and has giant rocks fall on him.
Yeah. That's good. That's
normal. Everything. Book three has his leg broken by a rabid dog.
Who
wasn't even a dog. And then is like maimed, has to be in the hospital for a long time again.
Yeah. And then book four, he's forced to be in the water, like he's one of the baits during the top of the fire.
I think that there is a 100% chance that I did not get consent for that.
Oh, 100. Definitely.
Yeah.
Get consent for that. Hey, kids, so here's the thing. Okay. We're going to paralyze you, and you're going to be underwater, guarded by Grindelows and mermaids, and you're going to be bait so that the people can retrieve you for a game.
Yeah, cool. So that's pretty bad. Brain tank. Also in five gets hit with several stuns and hexes and stuff from Death Eaters.
Sick.
And also gets disarmed by Hermione. So that's just more of a hit to the pride.
Yeah. Yep.
Hit to the pride.
And then six, he gets the love potion, almost dies from that, and then almost dies from the poisoning directly after the poisoning of the love potion.
We didn't mention the spiders in book two.
Oh yeah, he almost dies from that too.
And the Whomping Willow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then book seven, taken over by a Horcrux. He gets beaten and held for ransom by Snatchers. He gets splinched and just generally fucked up in the Battle of Hogwarts.
Yeah.
So that's
Ed too. Like, there's a lot of shit that goes on in book 7. But anyways.
Yeah. So that's, and then Hermione's body count is she gets tortured in book 7.
Tortured in book, no. She's petrified.
She gets petrified in book 2. Yep. Chamber of Secrets, she gets petrified.
She is also in book 4, one of the bait people.
She is a bait. She does encounter a troll in the first book, but she doesn't actually get hurt by it or do anything with it.
Right. That one's just more of like, scary.
Book 2, she's petrified, although I don't know that hurt.
No, but at the same time, like, that's a shit. She had to be in the hospital for it, so, you know.
Yeah. Book 3, she's generally pretty safe in book 3.
Yeah, she's chill. She's
pretty chill. Punches Malfoy. Book 4, she does have to be in the water. Yeah. Fifth book, she gets fucked. She gets her belt rung.
Yeah.
She's, like, knocked unconscious at the ministry.
Yeah.
Book 6.
I don't remember anything happening in book 6 to her.
No, I think she's pretty safe in 6. And then she's tortured in 7. Obviously, she also kind of gets her shit fucked at the Battle of Hogwarts. But, yeah, pretty much she has it the easiest.
For sure.
I would say.
Yeah.
So that's the body count. Neville still beats Ron by like 9,000.
Yeah.
Because that's like JK's epitome of comic relief is like, and then Neville tripped and broke his face. Or whatever. Poor Neville. So next segment is the relationship count, which ended up being even. For some reason, it seemed like some people had way more love interests in the trio. They have the same number. So Harry has Cho, kind of. Like, I would say that's his first crush. I don't know that I would consider it a relationship per se. No. And then Ginny. Like, that's the way that works. It's hard pass. The girl that you see him, like, flirting with in the train station coffee shop or whatever in the 6th movie does not exist in the 6th book.
Yeah.
So don't even ask about her. She's not a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't a real person to begin with because it's not real. But, yeah.
You don't know that, Delaney.
No, I don't. But considering it wasn't in the book, she's probably not.
Yeah. She's not in the book, so we don't care about her.
Yeah.
And then there's Ron, who also has 2.
Yep. Which one, I think that's why we think that Ron has, like, for some reason, like, the higher relationship, because of all of the trio, like, his relationship with Lavender is, like, the most
obvious,
serious. Talked about the most.
And, like, I would consider his relationship with Lavender an actual relationship. So he has 2 actuals. Harry has, like, 1 and a maybe.
And half.
They're like 1.2.
Yeah.
Because they go on one, Harry and Cho go on one date, and it's, like, total shit.
Right.
And it's on Valentine's Day, and Harry was, like, so not prepared for that. And he's, like, paranoid she's going to want to hold his hand. So I don't know that I would count that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we have Hermione, Crumb. I'm counting it. They maintain a very intimate, personal relationship with each other for many years.
Yeah.
So maybe not the whole time, but I would say when he's at Hogwarts, that they're dating. I would say they're dating.
Yeah. Like, that's the, I don't know why this became a thing, but, like, that, they were in the talking stage, you know? Like, there's
different. Yeah, I don't know that they had, like, developed any exclusivity decisions.
Right.
But I definitely think that, like, they were interested in each other and spending a lot of time together. And she, like, Harry, like, asked her, how's it going? And she's like, you know, we don't really talk much because he's more of a physical being. He just likes to watch me read and stuff. Like, that sounds like they're dating at least.
Yeah.
And after Goblet of Fire, I would say that they're not dating anymore.
Right.
But she's also not dating anybody else. So they could easily still be dating, I guess. Yeah. We don't get a lot of fleshing out of that relationship after Goblet of Fire. So it's hard to say.
Yeah.
But
that was more real than Cho, but not as real as Lavender, I would say.
Yeah. And then there's Smith. I don't know why I even put him on the list. That's the Zachariah Smith. He shouldn't even be on the list. She just invited him to dinner once.
Yeah, and it was clear purely just to make Ron jealous.
Literally just to make Ron jealous. And then there's Ron. So the trio dates basically who they're going to marry.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which, and there's like totally nothing wrong with that, guys. If you only date one person your whole life, that's totally chill. If you date 5,000 people, that's also totally chill. Date who you want to date. There have been comments on other podcasts who I'm not going to name because I do listen to their podcasts, but it's mostly out of spite, about how it's really wrong that they made it so that the trio didn't date a lot. And like, you know, marrying your high school sweetheart, like everyone just marries whoever's in their Hogwarts class. And like, that doesn't leave them with a lot of options. And it's like not a great lifestyle. Fuck that. Yeah. Do whatever you want.
Agreed.
Do whatever you want.
Agreed. And it's, again, it's not like this is a normal high school experience. They went through hell and back together.
Well, not only that, but like if you went to boarding school instead of an actual high school, there's so many less students. Like you probably would date people in your class.
Right.
Like if you live at the school that you go to, that's a really small school. Like if you go to a very small private college even.
Yeah.
There's only, if there's 500 people on campus, chances are the person that you date in college is the person you're going to marry. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, ugh.
Nothing
so
wrong.
That's the relationship count. Yep. But the best thing about this is we have a Horcrux count. Obviously, Harry killed the most Horcruxes. That's clear. Kind of his job.
But like, but Ron killed the second most, I would say.
Well, Ron only killed one. Also, Hermione only killed one, so they're tied. But also, Neville killed one. Technically, actually, Voldemort kills as many as Harry does.
Yeah.
So, Harry kills the Riddle Diary in Chamber of Secrets with the Basilisk thing, which is like the only information that they have on how to kill them in book 7. So nothing has changed from book 2 to book 7 in terms of their knowledge of killing these things.
Other than they do find out with Gryffindor sword, but only because it's impregnated with Basilisk.
With Basilisk, Harry kills the diary, and then he also kills what's inside of the diadem, the tiara of Rowena, I can't read, Ravenclaw's tiara, with, again, the basilisk fling, and then throws them into the fire, the friend fire that's created by Crab, Goyle, one of the stooges, who are black in the seventh movie.
No, they're not. They're both
black. Yeah, they are.
No, they're not.
No.
They're not black. They're the same actors.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
How long has it been since you've seen these movies?
Like a couple weeks.
Yeah, okay, so Crab is black and tall in the seventh movie.
I'm not sure I ever noticed that.
Okay, well, that's a really big thing for you to miss. So, yeah. They do that with all sorts of characters. If you guys don't know, Professor Flitwick is like 900 years old and then he's like 52.
Yeah.
So look at his character.
I have not noticed that. Nah, are you sure? Sure that wasn't Blaise the Beanie?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's Crab. It's Crab. I'll send you a picture when we get done recording.
Okay, because Blaise was black.
Yeah. No, it's Crab. So Harry kills two, both with the Basilisk Fang, which is nice. And then he himself is a Horcrux, but I don't count him dying as him killing it.
No, because Voldemort killed him. That was like
right. I mean, Harry elects to die, but Voldemort actually kills him. Right. So that does count as one of Voldemort's Horcruxes that he killed, because Voldemort does kill the Horcruxes Potter. And then Harry doesn't kill Voldemort. Harry makes it so that Voldemort's soul escapes. Yeah. So in the movie, it makes it seem like they cast counter curses. There is no counter curse, first of all. So it's funny that that's like the whole premise of the movie.
Yeah.
But they cast spells at the same time. And then Harry overwhelms him and he disintegrates into thin air. It's not like that. Harry disarms Voldemort in the book and he just dies.
Yep.
So the prophecy says that neither one can live while the other survives, which has created the fan theory that they're immortal unless killed by the other.
Yeah.
Which is a fun theory. But because that piece of soul died when Voldemort died, Voldemort gets that kill. So Harry and Voldemort are tied for the most all-time kills. And then, surprisingly, the other four are spread out among four people.
Right.
The first which is kind of fun.
Yeah. The first one is killed by Dumbledore, which we never actually see how he did it, but it's Marv Olugant's ring.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately which makes his hand all black and gunky.
Yeah, he gets zombie hand from it. And no, we don't see how he kills it, but we do know that he kills it.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
And we can guess that it was probably Gryffindor's sword, but it isn't shown.
Yeah.
But it's the only way. And also it makes sense that that's why he would leave the sword to the trio.
Yeah, he's already figured out that's a way to kill it because he did it himself. Right. Then Ron kills the piece of soul living in Slytherin's locket with Gryffindor's sword. Gryffindor's sword is a hot commodity. That and the basilisk fang. There's just not that much to kill them with.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And then Helga Hufflepuff's cup is destroyed by Hermione with a basilisk fang in Deathly Hallows Part 2 in the Chamber of Secrets. With a thing. A fang. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
we got a lot of fangs, and then we get more. We don't get any fang action, but we get more sword action because Nagini is killed by Longbottom and Deathly Hallows with the sword also. So really, there's two ways that they figure out to kill.
Only two.
There's only two. And then the other ones are freaky. It's hard for me to accept that Voldemort killed the Horcrux that was inside of Harry because you cannot kill a Horcrux with magic. That's the whole point. You have to destroy it beyond magical retribution.
But there might be a way for the person who made the Horcrux to kill it. That, I feel like, would be, like, the exception.
Is maybe.
The person who made it can kill it.
Maybe, because both of Voldemort's are not killed with any of the objects listed in the dark magic book that Hermione has at the beginning of Deathly Hallows as stuff that can be killed. And it's very expressly said that you can't kill it with magic. Like, you can't just light it on fire and it'll die. You have to actually kill the piece of soul living within it. So it's not just breaking it in a bunch of little tiny pieces. It's obliterating it.
Right. So. And also, like the piece that Voldemort kills in Harry, he does it because the host dies. Like the same way that all these other things, the host of the piece of the soul is killed.
Right, but that's the whole idea of a Horcrux. Voldemort made Horcruxes because if his host body was to die, then he could pick up the piece of his soul elsewhere.
Right.
So they're not actually killing the object. They're killing the soul within. And you can't kill the soul within with just regular magic or by like breaking the locket into pieces and stuff like that. So I'm going to have to do some digging on that one because he kills Harry with a killing curse.
Yeah, I think it probably comes back to the fact that he made it with a killing curse. So it makes sense that he would be able to kill it with a killing curse. Like,
well, but there's only one way to undo Horcrux, though.
Well, we don't know that. We don't really know a whole lot about Horcruxes.
We do know. It's expressly written in the seventh book that the only way to undo a Horcrux that you've done is to feel true and overpowering remorse to reattach that piece of soul to the point that some people have died trying to reattach their soul to their Horcrux because the remorse is so overwhelming.
Right, but it's still...
And he definitely wasn't feeling remorse.
No, but it's still a really dark and, like, kind of still mysterious magic. Like, I mean, supposedly nobody could make seven of them either. But he did it.
Well, they said people could make seven, but they had no idea why anyone would want to make seven of them.
Well, no, they thought that your soul might, like, you might disintegrate. Like, your soul might not be able to physically be split that many times.
Well, I don't know. I also thought that Voldemort hadn't killed that many people. And then it says in the seventh book that apparently he killed all the people that he created his zombie army with. All the Infertiti.
Yeah, those things. Yeah.
Were created by people he killed. So apparently in the graveyard, when all of the deaths are summoned from his wand, it only brings up the most recent kills.
yeah. Mm.
But we are getting off topic, which is okay, because the episode is over, guys. We will let you know what we find in terms of how Voldemort was able to kill the Horcruxes he had inadvertently created. Maybe it had to do with the fact that he didn't know that he created the Horcrux in Harry.
Possibly.
But at the same time, you're not supposed to be able to kill it with a killing curse, so I don't know. But anyways.
I think it stems back to what I was saying. But anyways, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, we will let you know next episode. But that's it.
That is it for our trio series.
That is it for our trio series. Six episodes on the people that we love. Harry, Ron, and Hermione are obviously phenomenal characters. Obviously crucial to the books. But super well written. I don't think there's really any aspect about them that I didn't enjoy or appreciate.
Right.
I just feel like they were so well written. Their friendships were so well written. She was able to write really authentic friendships, which I thoroughly enjoyed reading.
And three very, very authentic characters who are different in their own ways, but similar and get along. And I think it's important to show that.
That is the end. I'm sure there's stuff that we've missed.
100%.
Because there's so much. There's 198 chapters plus an epilogue, you guys. We probably have missed something. If we did, tell us. We want to know what you think is so important about these characters. We are on Instagram and Reddit as Lumos Maxima Podcast. We are on Twitter as Lumos Maxima Pod. And we can be emailed, if you got lots to say, at lumosmaximapodcast@gmail.com. We love getting feedback from you guys.
Yes,
so much, because it makes us think, it expands our little minds.
Yeah. In fact, one of the listeners contributed to this episode. So
yeah. So shout out to you. You know who you are.
Yep.
And
on that note, please rate, review, subscribe. Apparently not on Spotify, but
what's up with Spotify, guys? Ugh. Wherever you get them, though, especially, and not to plug like one podcasting center over another, but we get a majority of our listens on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Right.
On Apple Podcasts, you can rate, review, and subscribe. If you don't feel like subscribing because you don't want to know when we put out new episodes, that's weird, but okay. Sure. But please rate and review. It makes it easier for other people to find the podcast. It puts us a little higher on the list, and it just helps people find us so they can listen to us. And we're always looking for people to listen, because the more people that listen, the more people will give us input. And that's what this podcast is about.
Yes.
So, exciting. Mm-hmm. We will be back next week with a shorter episode. I know we've had a lot of long episodes lately, but we're going to do a little bit of a shorter episode. We are going to do a Q&A. We haven't done one since our very first episode. We have all new questions.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. If you have questions that you want us to answer, submit them. DM us, email us, tweet at us. So
do whatever.
Yeah, do whatever. We may or may not be doing the Q&A drunk. We haven't decided yet. I'm really busy.
Timing will be in it.
So I can't afford to be hungover going to work, because I work in a hospital, and that's frowned upon.
Yes, it is.
You know, I don't know why. I mean, if I'm hungover, I'm grumpy, but I'm not going to hurt anyone. No, I'm just kidding. I hope my work isn't
listening. Please don't.
Oh, gosh.
For the sake of patients, please don't.
Yeah, for the sake of people everywhere. I'm so not qualified to take care of people, you guys. That's not even funny. But that's going to wrap it up. We so look forward to hearing from you. We look forward to next week's episode. We actually have some really good questions in this one. They're a little bit deeper than our original host Q&A, which, if you want to know what we've talked about already, that's our first ever episode. Mm-hmm. And it's a good one. But we just have some like deeper topics this time. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really fun, and we can't wait.
Yes.
And thank you so much for listening to our trio mini series. We are very excited to do more mini series in the future. Our next one could be 5,000 different things, but it's probably going to be on fan theory about the elements of the Deathly Hallows as characters.
I'm so excited.
If I had to guess, that's like Delaney's favorite fan theory. I don't think it's that cool, but that's fine.
I'm so here for it.
I love it. So if it's not that, don't hold it against me. That's just the one I know off the top of my head. But I digress. Thanks for listening. We will catch you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.